The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
All right, my friends, I'm Alex Jones, your host, coming to you live from Austin, Texas, and we're joined by award-winning investigative journalist Greg Pallas of the BBC, who has just been named by a major publication in England as the greatest investigative journalist of all time. He's been doing it for decades, and he exposes the Republicans and the Democrats for their criminal activities, and he's going to break some major news stories here on the show today, and I assure you we'll get a transcript of it and post it by the end of the week on Infowars.com. Joining us from the radio studios there in Houston is Greg Pallas, joining us for a full hour. Greg, great to have you back on the show.
Alex, it is a real privilege. You are the bit of light that's breaking through the electronic Berlin Wall. For those who don't know me, I report for BBC Television, which is the major news outlet of the world, except it doesn't come into the U.S. My reports, they're basically blacked out. And so the only way I can kind of get through is if you hear me on Alex Jones and a few courageous radio stations. You've done tremendous work, Alex, and you're right. I'm considered a real annoyance, a pain in the bottom to both the Republicans and Democrats, because I'm an investigative reporter. I have to go after both. And today, the reason I wanted to come out today was to break a bit of news, and especially because today my book is coming out from Penguin Press, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. It comes out just today, and I asked Alex if I could launch the book on his program, not on the usual suspects on the big networks. I think that this is where I want to be. So it's coming out today, Best Democracy Money Can Buy. It's the real story of the Bush family, Democrats, Republicans. It has everything from 9/11 to theft of the election in Florida to the World Bank and IMF secret documents that I've uncovered. I've got brand new stuff. Those who had the hardbound, this is completely rewritten. It's twice as long. And
Greg, I'm not trying to toot my horn or your horn, but the example of what one person can do, people say, well, what can I do? Whoever leaked the Patriot Act 2 in the Justice Department is causing them big problems. The person that, one of our listeners that made a transcript, when you were on the show back on March 4th, that was published in hundreds of newspapers.
Throughout the world.
Translated into all these languages. It shows what the alternative media can do. Can you speak to that?
That's right. Well, I have to say, I was back in March, I was on your program, and I broke the fact that I had obtained a series of documents marked secret and confidential from inside the IMF and the World Bank, which basically, nation by nation, laid out plans for reorganizing these nations' economies. They were basically plans for financial coup d'etat in places like Argentina, Bolivia, Tanzania, and needless to say, those are plans which benefited a few New York financiers and a few corporations to their benefit.
And the plan detailed how to blow out economies, cause riots, take over the government, and install a new government.
And I have to say that our interview ran on the front page of papers in Turkey, Argentina. In fact, it's been translated in something like 40 languages. And I have to tell you that finally the mainstream press is catching up, because it's been a year since that broadcast, but this month's Harper's Magazine, which is, of course, one of the great voices of the New York establishment, it's a terrific journal, they are running that story now with copies of some of the documents, and I have brand new stuff. So, Alex, you're a year ahead of the pack. It's going to be all over the place now, but you were the guy who was ahead. It's in the book, by the way, my discussions with you and the newest information.
I mean, because I have your hardback. You're saying the new edition coming out in how many languages has our interview?
It has. I have your interview in something in 12 languages in the book. In the U.S. edition, I make mention of it. You're acknowledged in the back for the stand-up work that you have done.
Wow, I didn't know that. Well, thank you, Greg. I mean,
that just shows
the alternative media can have an effect.
It's not the alternative. You've got some new
bombshells today.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there's a few. As one of the stories I broke on BBC television was that before September 11th, FBI agents and CIA agents told BBC television that they were blocked from investigating certain members of the bin Laden family in America who were tied to suspect terrorist organizations, and that they could not investigate Saudi Arabian funding of Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups. And they were very frustrated that they could not do this investigation before September 11th. We have a document showing that the investigations were permitted to go forward beginning September 13th, 2001. And I have to say, you know, I'm not saying, I don't know whether George Bush had any knowledge or pre-knowledge of September 11th or any of that. What I was investigating, though, was why were the intelligence agencies told to stay away? And now I want to give you a piece of information, Alex, which some of it's in the new book and some is just will be on your show for the first time today. One of the things I was very concerned about, BBC learned about from two completely separate sources about a meeting in June of 1996 in Paris between Saudi Arabian billionaires, international arms dealers, and the finance arm of Al-Qaeda. And there was a discussion about how much the Saudis would pay to Al-Qaeda and these other so-called charities that were really fronts for terrorist organizations. The idea was that the Saudis were going to pay off these guys to get out of Saudi Arabia. That was the month that 19 American servicemen were killed in Saudi Arabia when Al-Qaeda blew up the Khobar Towers. So 19 American servicemen were dead, and so the Saudis, rather than go after these guys, said, well, we'll write them a big check and tell them to go play in Afghanistan. And I was wondering why the intelligence agents were not freed by the Bush administration to really go after that source of funding. You know, the old rule of investigation is follow the money. If you can't look at Osama bin Laden's piggy bank, you can't check out his checking account, you're not going to know what he's up to. So I found out who was at the meeting. And one guy at the meeting, according to two separate sources, is a Saudi, a rich Saudi named Sheikh Abdullah Baksh, B-A-K-S-H is usually how it's spelt in English.
And he was involved in Harkin and even back in the 70s.
Boy, you've got a good memory. You know exactly where it comes from. This guy was supposedly in this meeting about funding Al-Qaeda. And what we also know is that when George W. Bush was in the oil business, he never made, he made millions in the oil business, though he never struck oil, but he seemed to strike the pockets of several Saudi sheikhs. Every time he had a oil venture going south, he had one called Arbusto, then another called Spectrum. Finally, those were bought up by Harkin Oil. A Gulf sheikh would come in and put up the money to pull out George W. out of the financial fire. And it was Sheikh Abdullah Baksh, who was the big money helping to refinance Harkin Oil and save George W. from basically from bankruptcy in the oil business. And so this is the guy, in other words, this is George. You know, when our president says there are thousands of people out there trying to kill us and people supporting terror, he might want to look at some of his own business partners.
Now, isn't he one of the richest people in Saudi Arabia? And also bin Laden's older brother was involved in it, too, right here in Texas.
Well, you know, we did have, I haven't been able to get the information on the Texas story. You may have more information on that. What I was concerned about is that there are two members of the bin Laden family in Washington, D.C., in Virginia Falls, which overlooks the Pentagon, and Abdullah and Omar bin Laden. Now, we have to be careful. There's lots of Abdullahs, and there's lots of Omar bin Ladens. The guy had 50, you know, Osama has 52 brothers and sisters, so, you know, it's quite a family. So not all of them, just because they're named bin Laden or even Abdullah, are suspect. But these two guys, and you had this on your program, because this was from the FBI document 199I, which is a national security secret document, which agents basically dropped off for us because they were upset that they couldn't investigate these guys. And they were fronting an organization called WAMI, and which sounds very nice, the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, you know, and they do actually support like little baseball teams and basketball teams and that type of thing. But I saw some of their films of their training camp for kids. It was basically recruitment for suicide bombings, recruitment for jihad. This is going on in Florida, by the way. And now it turns out that a member of this organization, headed by, at one point, by the bin Ladens and by the Saudi royal family, turns out to be the conduit for the tapes from Osama bin Laden to Al Jazeera television. The guy was just arrested in Somalia from WAMI. This is the organization that the FBI wanted to investigate, and they were told, back off. And what we have to be concerned about is I'm very concerned whether the Bush family's finances are prejudicing their view of how to conduct foreign policy and how to handle the intelligence.
Well, in early 2001, Wall Street Journal called for the Bushes to get out of the Carlyle Group.
Yes, for those who don't know, and if you've been listening to Alex, I'm sure you do know, the Bin Laden family is one of the funders of the Carlyle Group. And, you know, this is one of the problems you run into with many things. You were talking about the Homeland Security and USA Patriot Act. One other thing that's coming out in the book, and by the way, if you don't mind me mentioning the book out today, it's The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, acknowledging the great work of Alex Jones, and to get this word into the USA. Like I say, it's mainstream stuff in the rest of the world, but, you know, I'm kind of, you know, put out as a pariah on U.S. television or...
They now admit universal censorship. They're actually telling them, from the nightly newsrooms to the Grammys, no criticism of the Fuhrer.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I had Dan Rather on my show in Britain. Another reporter was questioning him. And he said, look, we can't ask the tough questions about September 11th. We can't ask the tough questions about the war in Iraq. I know we should, but we just can't do it because I'll be lynched as unpatriotic. And when does questioning become unpatriotic, Alex? It really gets me a bit concerned.
Well, Teddy Roosevelt said that was the definition of being patriotic.
Well, you know, when you're talking about Homeland Security, you know, and keeping track of your private finances, whether you own an illegal weapon, et cetera, who is the company making the money off this? Forbes magazine says that we don't know who's lost the war on terror, but we sure know who's won. It's a company called ChoicePoint, and you'll find this in the book, which is The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. And what the interesting thing about ChoicePoint, if you remember, I broke a story in BBC, which, Alex, you also mentioned, that before the Florida election of 2000, before the presidential election, Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush knocked off 57,000 legal voters off the voter rolls. And it turns out that most of them were black. It's not that they had prejudice against black. They didn't like the fact that the color of black votes, which is generally vote Democratic. And who gave them this list of voters? Supposedly they were knocked off because they were felons and evildoers who were not allowed to vote in Florida. Well, it turns out all those people, 90.2% of the people on that list were innocent, and that swung the election. Who came up with that rotten little list? It was a company called ChoicePoint. Who is the biggest contractor for the war on terror and Homeland Security for spying on Americans? ChoicePoint. They picked the president. The president has picked them for the total information awareness business. These guys are, and now they want your blood, Alex. You'll find this in the book, too. There's a company called Bode Technologies, which has been getting a lot of good airplay because they supposedly find all the kiddies who you see their pictures on the milk cartons, missing children. They try to use DNA samples to find the missing kids. It's a very heartwarming story, and they encourage you to send them, you know, your blood and your DNA and your hair and all that in case your kid gets lost. What they should tell you is that this company, Bode Technologies, is also the biggest contractor to the FBI for supplying their DNA CODIS system.
Well, they've even said, I had one of these individuals connected to the group on the show who had pushed back in the early 90s for a federal law that we all have to give DNA at birth, and now it's come out that a lot of those HEAL blood tests they've been doing, most of the states have now been caught, but they keep doing it. They go, oh, it's a blood test for your baby. They take three ampules. One goes to the health department, which is for the blood test. One goes to the state, and one to the feds. They've got illegal DNA databases. And, again, this is just being done, and it's always shadowy, you know, slash CIA front companies involved in it, as you just mentioned.
Well, in fact, this company, Bode Technologies, is 100% owned subsidiary of the company that made Bush president, ChoicePoint, the same company. I mean, for picking our president, they've done very well for themselves. While the rest of the stock market's going down the tubes, this company is rising.
Well, yeah, look at it. The oil's up, the bank's up, the security, the police state stocks are all up. This is our new economy as a gulag.
Well, you know, so I have some chapters of who's really winning the war on terror in the book, in The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. And I got to tell you, there's, you know, we've got other problems. Not only the Bush family is deeply involved with Saudi Arabia, so it's like, see no Saudi evil, hear no Saudi evil, speak no Saudi evil, which is fine if that helped the interests of the United States. But one has to ask, when you have 15 of 19 hijackers coming from Saudi Arabia, what's really going on here? I'm very concerned, and I have to tell you, I spoke to agents, FBI agents, CIA agents, And, you know, some of them, you know, those are agencies which have done some pretty strange things that we wish they hadn't done. But there's a lot of guys in there who are really trying to protect America. And
well,
not
one
that. Of
that's
them.
Why we're, that's and, why we're getting all these leaks now.
That's right. That's, they're leaking it out. Because, you know, and not one of them said, Alex, if we didn't have the Bill of Rights, we could have gotten these guys. If we didn't have personal freedoms, we could have gotten
but
these
guys. But Ashcroft and others and George Will are now saying exactly that while they leave the borders wide open. Greg, let me, just for a second, because I know you've got some other news you want to break here, and we're honored to have you. Bill Moyers reported on something that MSNBC, that the New Yorker magazine, and Fox just mentioned a year ago, that as Kunduz and Kandahar were falling, then it was 6,000, now it's upwards of 8,000, cream of the crop, Al-Qaeda and Taliban loaded on U.S. government aircraft with ISI flown out to safety, and we know that the Republican Senate report in 99 said that Al-Qaeda was being funded by Clinton, that means the CIA, to attack the Serbs to start that war. And so here we have the government flying them out. And Bill Moyers, I read part of his transcript yesterday, well, they did fly them out. It's just an accident. You start connecting all this together. We know they were CIA assets in the past. You start connecting it all together. Greg, I got to tell you, I know you're a BBC reporter. You can't go out on a limb here. I do, because I have the facts and all of it together. This thing is a giant operation, and, we were kooks to say prior knowledge. That's now admitted fact. I think you got more than prior knowledge. You got funding and training. The L.A. Times reported tens of millions of dollars in early 2001 being sent to the Taliban. The only Taliban leader to be held by our government was the one guy who blew the whistle about 911. He stayed behind it, and he'd be a hero. They grabbed him. He's off at some undisclosed location. They had this top Taliban general, Washington Times reported, CIA ordered his release. I mean, all these pieces together, what do you have to say about that?
Well, that's what I'm hunting down, the pieces. I'll let you put it together, Alex. I just provide the dots. You can make the connection. I mean, one of the reasons why I believe that the bin Laden connection to this terrorist organization was not hunted down before September 11th, or terrorist front organization, or recruiting organization, however you want to call it, is that, as you said, it started really with the Daddy Bush administration and carried through the Clinton administration.
Well, what about the Larry Klayman got up on national TV and said, we can't tell you what we know. Here's a letter threatening to arrest us. He had Robert Wright, the FBI agent, and then he added to all of this. So the Bushes, by the way, vacation with the Bin Ladens. That's all I can say. It's amazing, Greg.
Yeah, well, there's, the backing of the Chechens, that's all blowback. I mean, these guys were created by the Bush family.
Tell you what, stay there, Greg Palast. Quick break.
We got the IMF stuff, too.
Yeah, we've got the IMF revelations, a bunch of stuff about the election. It's a CIA military-industrial complex takeover. We're joined by Greg Palast. I'm Alex Jones. All right, the second hour is coming up.
A gun on my hip.
And Greg Powell will be with us for about another 35 minutes. We'll open the phones up a little bit later. The toll-free number to talk to Greg Palast is 1-800-259-9231. If you'd like to get my documentary films about September 11th or my book, Descent into Tyranny, just go to Infowars.com or net. Or call toll-free 1-888-253-3139. That's 888-253-3139 or Infowars.com. Greg Palast's website that we have a link to is GregPalast.com. He has a best-selling book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. All this talk about the loving world government, the democracy, it's bad enough. We need a constitutional republic, but they're not even... they're just calling pure tyranny their loving world democracy, and Greg's got a bunch of other bombshell news stories to latest developments to drop on us, and we're honored to have him here with us today. Greg Palast, continuing with the information, any other key points you want to add?
Well, there's several, like you say, the book that just came out today, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, the hardbound, I think hit the New York Times bestseller list because of Alex Jones. Because so many of the listeners decided that they needed this information. It shocked everyone. The Times said, where did this book come from? Well, Alex, we know. But the new book is a special U.S. edition. It's double in size of what it was. And one of the new things in there is we're about to go into Iraq, part of the reason is that Saddam has a bomb, or he has at least the erector set to make one.
And who gave him those components?
Yeah, read it right in the book. What you have is we had a defector that came from Saudi Arabia with 14,000 documents in his possession from the Saudi Arabians. The FBI was offered these documents. This is when Bill Clinton was president. The FBI was offered these documents. They said, no thanks, we're not allowed to look. But I could tell you what was in those documents. And one of the things was information that the Saudi Arabian government gave $7 billion to Saddam to build his bomb. And that could have only happened, that happened during the Reagan-Bush administration, because at that time, if you remember, we didn't have an axis of evil. We had a unicycle of evil, Iran. And the idea was we'd give Saddam the bomb so he could shake it at the Iranians. We didn't care if he had a bomb, that berserker. You know, it's very interesting. So that's in the book.
Well, by the way,
the FBI didn't want that information.
Rumsfeld just wasn't the bag man for the sarin, the VX, the West Nile, the anthrax, the botulism for 6 months over there. He also was involved on the board of ABB transferring nuclear reactors that can produce 100 warheads a year, that we now learn, to North Korea. So they go set up these people. It's always Bush former associates. You know, it's always bin Laden or it's Saddam or it's Noriega. It's always somebody they arm, and then we got to have our kids march off to death in this World War III when Bush says it's a new 100-year war.
Well, yeah, it's kind of all war all the time, economy, hoping that that will save our economy. And, you know, some of the goofy things that they're doing, for example, one of the big projects, our government is now busting the budget to order 36 Virginia-class nuclear submarines. These were supposed to attack Soviet subs. Well, there aren't any Soviet subs. There's no Soviet Union. So what they're doing is they're making them war on terror machines to fight the war on terror. And what they're loading these billion-dollar babies with are torpedoes. Listen to this one, Alex. You'll love this one. Torpedoes, which will be filled with 9 Marines. I don't know where they're going to get the volunteers to get the torpedo, but this is how they said, here's how you land. We're going to fight the war on terror by landing Marines, Navy SEALs and Marines on the beaches. The Israelis do this type of commando operation. They use canoes. We're going to use a $1.6 billion submarine to fire torpedoes filled with Navy SEALs.
Stay right there, Greg Ballast. I want to get back into the World Bank, the IMF, because
you
when you were on this show March 4th, you said there's going to be a coup in the next month, and there was an attempted coup 2 weeks later, actually a week and a half later. I want to talk about the World Bank, IMF, how they brag of how they're going to destroy all these economies, how they institute the police state, who's really behind all this. It's all coming up, and your call. Second hour, I'm Alex Jones talking to Greg Ballast, InfoWars.com.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
In this email Greg Ballast sent me, he said, you're allowing me to speak about the sinister and secretive plans of the IMF World Bank have now become mainstream approval. He says, my exposure, it's his exposure, of inside documents from inside the New World Order will be featured in this month's Harper's Magazine. And then we have the New York Times last week, Richard Bernstein, Nations Seek World Order Centered on UN, not U.S., and it says the meeting was saturated by the World Bank with the heads of Europe. The meeting was saturated with a commitment to what may be viewed as a form of world government, the supervision of countries by international civil service bureaucracy. And this is all run by the World Bank and the IMF, and it's not freedom-loving, it's tyranny-loving. It's the new empire. It's not about left or right. It's about organized crime syndicates, ladies and gentlemen. And joining us is Greg Ballast, who was just talking about confirmed connections with the bin Laden family and the Bushes with the WAMY group being protected and these meetings in the late 1990s, and then Bush protecting these people as well as Clinton doing it, and how all this ties together, and now how the military-industrial complex is winning the war on terror, that is, winning the profits. The hundreds of billions of dollars of profits, they say it'll be a $1.7 to $1.9 trillion. This is very important. $1.7 to $1.9 trillion five-year occupation and war cost in Iraq. Greg Palast, getting back into the latest revelations on the IMF World Bank documents, they never deny that you got those from a secret source. They just tried to spin it, but it has caused a firestorm. How are they dealing with this now that the evidence came out that they were orchestrating the implosion of economies?
Well, what they're doing is once again saying, once again they're saying that I'm a conspiracy nut. I always think that gives the conspirators a good laugh. You know, what's happened is they have a problem in that they vilified me and they vilified the guy who interpreted the documents. He didn't hand me the documents, but he interpreted them. The former chief economist of the World Bank. He knew that these documents were authentic. And his name is Joe Stiglitz, and they got a problem because they were vilifying him as a nutcase and an evil guy, and then he just won the Nobel Prize in economics. So this is a Nobel Prize winner who said, Alex, that the information we had was authentic. What these are is documents about, some of them are called nicely, politely, country assistance plans, but they direct these nations to give up their resources. For example, in the nation of Ecuador, it said that this country could receive no international funds. And just like if you can't go to the bank to get a mortgage, you can't get a house. They were going to cut off their financing unless they met certain what they called conditionalities. One of the conditionalities was that a permit be given to British Petroleum for a pipeline over the Andes and that they give their gas to British Petroleum. In the case of Argentina, they required the nation to give up its water systems to guess who? A company named Enron. And you know who was lobbying for Enron, I discovered, and is brand new to my book. My book, by the way, again, came out today, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, the brand new U.S. revised edition. And in this new U.S. edition, I say, who benefited from that World Bank dictate to Argentina to turn over its gas supplies, its oil supplies, and its water supplies to Enron and a couple of other operators? The Public Works Minister of Argentina got a call from a guy named Jeb Bush saying, listen, my daddy was just elected president. This was in 1988, and he would appreciate, and it would create good relations with the United States if you would please give a company named Enron that contract for Argentina's gas. And the guy from the public works minister in Argentina was horrified because Enron was only going to pay one-fifth of the world price for this stuff. What was the Bush family doing getting involved in that?
It's amazing. It's criminal. And on top of it, the World Bank IMF documents also state how their actions, grabbing the water, the roads, the fuel, the forest, will cause riots, and how that's good because then they get to crack down even more. We'll be right back in 3 minutes with Greg Palast to launch into some of the latest revelations about the IMF World Bank takeover. Now it's finally breaking in the mainstream news. Then your calls.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
The organization the FBI was blocked from investigating by Clinton and Bush was headed by the U.S. Bin Laden family is now unquestionably tied to terrorism. The new book is The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. It's already a bestseller, and now it's in paperback, twice the size, with a lot of added information coming out in paperback today around the country. We're joined by Greg Palast, and coming up in a few minutes, we're going to go to your calls, John and Jan and others that are patiently holding the toll-free number to join us on air nationwide is 1-800-259-9231. Greg Palast, getting back into the IMF World Bank, you detailed in our interview March 4th that there would be a coup. Guaranteed, you said. You don't, again, go out on limbs. You've always got to have the documentation. Yeah. How did you know there'd be a coup? I mean, the military grabbed him. He was about to have an accident, and suddenly there were riots, and they had to release him. How did you know that was going to happen?
That was the president of Venezuela. Well, it was not much guessing, because I know how these guys operate, and I was able to get the word from the plotters. And, I have my hands into both camps. I try to get the information. So it was, it turns out that OPEC got advance warning of what was about to happen. Now, the problem that we run into is, you know, no one's looking at Venezuela except for you and a few people. The war is aimed at Iraq, but
this is where
like
we get most
to
of
get
our oil.
Venezuela. Right. Our oil coming into Texas is heavy Venezuelan crude. It was Venezuela which broke the Arab oil embargo 73, And the Bush administration wants to make sure that we have control of Venezuela's oil now. So they keep talking about Iraq.
Yeah, so they can keep oil prices high during the war. They don't want Venezuela bringing us cheap crude. They want to rip you off at the pump. I hope you enjoy it. Heating fuel has doubled in prices.
Yeah, well, it's gone crazy. And then now, and then also this story about the World Bank. As you know, I went through the documents from the World Bank, Mark Secret, and one of the things it had in there, it said, well, if we go ahead with these plans, we know, for example, in the case of Ecuador, it says right in the plan, if we go ahead and require you to double the price of cooking gas in Ecuador, because that's the only way you can cook your food in Ecuador is with bottled gas. So this is like, you know, life and death food out in people's mouths. If you increase the price of food, you increase the price of gasoline, you increase the price of cooking gas, we know that this will create what they called social unrest. And when they did that, of course, the social unrest, what they mean by social unrest, I wasn't quite sure. I said, it looks like they think that there's going to be a riot if they impose these plans, and they know it. And Joe Stiglitz, who's the chief economist for the World Bank, so he was the guy on the inside, he says, oh yeah, that's what we called the IMF riot. It was a riot. It was written into the plan. And then it says that the government has to respond with political resolve and strong resolve. They keep using that term. That means troops in the streets.
Greg Palast, I'm going to go back for a second here. This is so important. We cannot just glaze over this, folks. You've got to listen carefully.
And
they create the climate to create the disaster, to offer a police state solution, and then before that, they don't want this Venezuelan crude coming into the country to keep prices down. They want a staged war where they'll make massive profits on increased gas prices. This is total criminal activity.
Well, you know what's happening is that also... Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela, has been vilified by the liberal press, by the right press, the establishment press. He's a guy who just says, look, we're poor brown people down here, and we need a few extra bucks. And he is, as his minister told me, he is the dissenter from the New World Order, and they can't let him stay in office. They have to kill him. They have to get rid of him now because he said no to these plans. See, the IMF comes to you, and the World Bank guys, they fly in their teams, they stay at the big intercontinental hotels and the five-star hotels, and then they dictate their plans, an average of 114 conditions, an average, to each nation's finance minister. And they have a pre-written document with a place for his signature. So they say it's voluntary. It's voluntary, like, you know, there's a financial gun to this guy's head.
Well, it's like Don Corleone in The Godfather, an offer you can't refuse.
Right. So, of course, they sign off. And usually these plans are kept secret or partly secret, and people only see the effects. Suddenly the prices of gasoline or oil rise, and suddenly food prices rise. People don't know what's going on, or their pensions are cut. Last week in Bolivia, 35 people were killed because the IMF ordered an increase, a massive increase in taxes on working people there. People, and while they cut salaries, people couldn't afford it. The taxes were bigger than their salaries, so they rioted. But the IMF knew there was going to be a riot. And like you say, riots have their value because then that allows the reaction.
Well,
and the
we've caught them at demonstrations here, the feds in Seattle, hiring provocateurs, housing them, so sometimes they provocateured as well. But people in the third world are starting to get wind of this because of your writings and work, and because of listeners with a transcript that I know went worldwide and hundreds of newspapers, as you said. But the thing that folks have to understand here is they're doing it here in another fashion, and they're telling police, and I'm getting this all over the country, Greg, that they're going to engineer a major financial implosion here, and that they've been issuing riot gear and riot training, and I'm not kidding, Humvees with microwave guns. And the Sunshine Project reported helicopters with knockout gas. I mean, it is an insane police state they're setting up for an engineered collapse here. Are you getting that from your sources
What I'm getting is, I haven't looked at the police side of it. What I'm looking at is the intelligence side. What's breaking down now, for example, when I talked about that company getting the DNA samples, they say, well, this is private, we don't turn it over to government. Choice Point, the company that fixed the election in Florida, says we have 20 billion pieces of data on Americans, and that is supposed to be private data. But under the USA Patriot Act, every little bit of that information is suddenly open without a search warrant for the first time in American history, without a search warrant.
And it gives that liability protection to the companies doing the DNA and other data mining.
Yeah, and so this data mining, which is done without search warrants, they can go through your private records now for the very first time. So when these companies say it's all private, no, it ain't. Not under the new law, it ain't. And that's one of the big problems. And I got to tell you, agents aren't saying we need that to capture the bad guys. They know where the bad guys are. They just want to be able to use the laws that already exist.
Yeah, they're on C-130s getting flown out of Kandahar.
You know, and I got to tell you is that the, you know, when you look at who's doing the data mining, there's a company called Syntech, which was hired, which was given a big fat contract by John Poindexter, who's head of the Total Information Awareness
Program. Who's a convicted felon?
By the way, 5 felony convictions. So they were overturned on technicalities, Alex, I have to say. But you got a guy who's running our spy agencies who has 5 felony convictions. Yes, they were overturned on technicalities, but it was serious.
By a political judge.
Yeah, so what's happened is that this is the guy in charge. The company Syntech, which is getting the big contracts to do the data mining on Americans, was the senior vice president until recently was John Poindexter, the guy in charge of Total Information Awareness. These guys are like filling each other their own companies.
Greg, have you read the new Patriot Act?
Just parts of it is so big and so mind-boggling.
Well, I read all of it, wrote an analysis on InfoWars.com if you want to pick it up on your site so all of your millions of viewers can distribute it. I've read the whole thing, and it's been picked up by quite a few papers. I've asked for permission to reprint. I read it when it first came out 3 weeks ago. It turned out there was a Senate version, S-22, already introduced, and so now Ashcroft and his minions are out promoting it. This thing says that they can grab American citizens for any reason, secretly, hold them in detention camps, and not even tell anyone that they were grabbed.
I know. In fact, you know, there's an organization which sued the U.S. government and simply asked for a list of people being held in detention. Not even asking for open trial, simply asking for the list of those who were held in detention. And, you know, the government has just dragged its feet. I mean, you know, I'm very concerned that there are two things. One, like I say, there are those people who are connected financially to the Bush family who seem to be getting a nice free ride on investigations, and yet they're Americans. We don't know who they are because we can't get the list, and we don't even know how many. I'm very concerned about this. I know you are, and it's just a personal question of, you know, our civil liberties. I've just moved. I have had to report these stories on BBC television, which goes all over the planet. But I've just moved my family back to the United States. I want my kids to be Americans, but I want them to have an America that, you know, I learned about in school, you know, freedom of speech and, you know, the government can, you know, doesn't snoop around your home or your bank accounts or go into your underwear drawer.
Well, I just want to point out they're saying all this. They're saying more attacks are coming, and then that'll legitimize Patriot Act 2. Now we're hearing about Patriot Act 3. And while they leave the borders wide open, Greg, let's take some calls. John in Florida, you're on the air with Greg Palast. Go ahead, John.
Thank you for taking my call. Thank you for all your hard work, gentlemen. Both of you, I mean that very sincerely. My question is going to be directed to something that happened many years ago, but Greg, maybe you can give some light on this, is what happened to the falling out of what was called 20 years ago BCCI, how everybody from that conglomerate, internationally known, has been recycled in some way, shape, or form into these institutions that you speak of.
Well, Clark Clifford, the author of the National Security Act that made the government go secret, I've talked to Greg. BCCI is involved, aren't they? The same players.
Yeah, Khalid bin Mahfouz was the principal of BCCI, which is the bank of it's a Saudi Arabian bank, BCCI. Its nickname was those banks of crooks and criminals. And but it was a huge international operation, which is basically a giant money laundering operation for everything from crime to terrorism.
Thank you.
And the Bushes and everybody were involved.
Well, Khalid bin Mahfouz, remember I just told you about how Bush's partner, according to two sources, was at this meeting in which al-Qaeda funding was discussed in Paris in 96. One of the other people in that room, according to two sources, Khalid bin Mahfouz of BCCI. So it's, you know, it's the same crew. And, you know, look, I can't blame George Bush for these guys having some secret meeting. You know, he wasn't invited as far as I know. But, you know, the FBI and CIA would really like to follow up on these things so we can find out what these characters are up to.
Anything else, John?
No, I just wanted to make... The BCCI hasn't talked about enough when we were talking about up-to-date stuff. I just want to throw that in there.
Yeah, so, yeah, BCCI technically has now collapsed and taken billions of dollars down the rat hole. But the principles in this operation...
Like, yeah, they always blow out their fronts, whether it's BCCI or Enron.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, John. We'll come back and talk to others with our guest, Greg Palast. A new book just came out today, Best Democracy Money Can Buy, doubled in size. The hardback was a bestseller. Website's GregPalast.com. We have a link to that at InfoWars.com. I'm Alex Jones, your host. Final segment with Greg Palast. Your calls and other key news items. When we get back, and then I'm going to launch into more calls and your news in the segment after that. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to the M2K Talk Archives. And we are listener-supported with the Honor System. We ask that you wait. Don't donate a dollar at a time. PayPal charges a 35-cent surcharge on anything of a dollar or less. Wait till you listen to 5 or 10, and then donate, please. We appreciate your voluntary support.
We're talking to Greg Palast. We've only got time for a couple more calls and any other key comments he wants to make. Let's talk to Jan in Montana. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning, Alex and Greg. It's still morning in Montana. My question is, my comment is, there's a name that I've been waiting for Alex to hit on hard and heavy this week, and I was wondering what Greg Palast has heard about it or any information. All Arion, I thought, would be a huge chapter in your case against 911, Alex. We printed a picture about a year ago when O'Reilly says he broke the story on All Arion, the professor from Florida.
And it turns out he's been hanging out with Bush and these other organizations. Greg, any comments on that?
Yeah, I just started looking at this. The question is whether there was some also donations again to the Bush family. It's definitely a line of investigation. Once again, you know, where is the American press? I mean, I can't do it all. You know, I'd like my brothers in the American press to be looking at this before the arrests are made. And what's even more dangerous is when the arrests aren't made at all. It's a very complex business, and I just feel like the U.S. press has just completely fallen down.
They won't talk about a Miami Herald report, and it was just a few others, that for the 3 days that all air traffic was shut down, locked down, there were jets leaving Miami and jets leaving Boston Logan full of bin Ladens.
Well, you know, I know that at least after the air traffic control limit was lifted, there was a charter jet which moved some of the members of bin Laden family out. And remember, they're not all they're not terrorists just because their name is bin Laden. The thing is that FBI agents have wanted to contact these people. They're material witnesses.
Well, why were they allowed to leave but nobody else could?
Well, I think that it was still, they had a special charter supposedly on the grounds that, you know, being bin Ladens, that they might be attacked by angry Americans, though, you know, Americans are not that dumb. They don't just take someone's last name and attack them. We haven't had any concept of that. And in fact, the two guys that the FBI was looking for left even before September 11th, Abdullah and Omar. That was the real tragedy, is that those guys had a few questions.
What about the insider trading? You know, that was traced back to some of the airlines themselves and, of course, to some of the CIA people.
That I haven't been able to look into. You know, like I say, we need we need a more active American press. Like Dan Rather, when he was on my show, said, look, we can't ask tough questions.
Art in Kansas, you're on the air. Go ahead, Art. Last caller, Art, you're on the air.
If you are aware of the connection of the Bushes with the Eli Lilly Company.
Oh, yeah, well, of course, there is a financial connection between the Republican administration now.
And throwing out over 1,000 lawsuits over autism being directly linked to their vaccine additive.
That's right.
Camarasol.
And, in fact, I'm also here in Houston, Texas, where I'm talking from. And you know, one of the big dangers we have to look out for in terrorism is attack on our chemical plants. And what, for example, if you live within 2 miles of the giant Exxon refinery here and you have a pentane release, anyone within 2 miles is going to have their skin burned off. There are 7,000 people living in that vulnerability zone. And there are two ways to fix that problem. First, you can make the plant safer and more secure. Or second, you can simply, you know, seal up that information so no one will know what the danger is.
And that's what they've done.
That's what they decide. So what they've done is for Exxon, they've now blocked all the EPA records so you don't know what the danger is.
Well,
and if you're living in vulnerability zones, you're still as vulnerable.
I have a newsletter here from Robert Chapman. He says Bush's budget director, Mitch Daniels, formerly worked at Lilly. The CEO, Sidney Taurel, sits on the Presidential Homeland Security Council. and Bush Sr. sat on the Eli Lilly board.
And the new Federal Trade Commission guy is a Skull and Bones member. Thanks for the call, Art.
All right.
I tell you, it's one big happy family, isn't it, Greg?
Yeah, what I'm worried about is the money poisoning of our political system. It's not a case of one party or another. What I'm worried about, and the reason I call the book The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, it looks like we're holding auctions, not elections. And the question is, what are these donations buying? That is a very, very big problem. In fact, let me end with one final thing, Alex. Who won the last Gulf War? After the last Gulf War, remember we were promised democracy in Kuwait. I'm still waiting for the election returns from Kuwait, from that little royal dictatorship. But who did win? I'll tell you. Chevron Oil. After Poppy Bush left the White House, or he was removed by two-thirds of the American electorate, after he left the White House, he wrote a letter to the Emirate asking Kuwait to give Chevron Oil an oil concession. The ex-president of the United States, the guy who saved their Rolls Royces, asked them to give Chevron oil. They did that, and his son got $500,000 into his campaign kitty.
Unbelievable. Thanks for joining us, Greg Palast, and good luck with your new book, and I appreciate you coming on the show and your great work.
Alex, you're the best. Truth to power.
All right. Thank you very much. There goes Greg Palast. I'm going to come back, get into all the other news, a bunch of news. Take your calls at 1-800-599-2311.